75 years ago tomorrow, an epic bridge collapse in Western Washington made headlines around the world.
The Tacoma Narrows Bridge, dedicated in 1940, was the pride of the Northwest. Then, the third longest suspension span, it became known as Galloping Gertie, as it swayed in the winds sweeping up Puget Sound. 4 months after it was opened, those winds sent the bridge into a rhythmic dance of death. It literally shook itself to pieces.
It was November 7th, 1940, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapsed into Puget Sound. Felix Bunnell is a freelance journalist, the former deputy director at MOHI, Seattle's Museum of History and Industry. He told KUOW's David Hyde about the bridge, which came to be known as Galloping Gertie.
1940 is when the bridge opened. World War II had already started in Europe. It had been on the horizon for a long time. So it was easy to get federal money for that bridge because it helped us connect Seattle and Tacoma and all the military stuff we had here. And what they called the Puget Sound Navy Yard over there in Bremerton, which is now the Naval Shipyards.
And who was the designer?
Late in the process, they brought in this guy named Leon Mosieff, who was from back east. He'd been involved in the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. He'd been involved in the Manhattan Bridge. Lots of bridge projects.
So here's this guy. They bring in this nationally famous sort of Mr. Bridge who'd been involved with the Manhattan Bridge and others. What did he get wrong in this case? What did he get wrong about the Tacoma Narrows Bridge?
The bridge they built actually ended up being more like a wing of a plane. It's fairly lightweight because it's narrow. It's not the six lanes that the Golden Gate Bridge was. It's two lanes. It's got these big flat girders that were like sails or like the wing of an airplane. And so when the wind was blowing through the Tacoma Narrows, it would cause it to move up and down like the wing of an airplane. And as it was getting more and more damaged, that early November of 1940, different pieces broke, different cables that were supporting different parts of the bridge were snapping and were fatiguing. And so by the time the morning of November 7th, when the wind is blowing about 42 miles an hour, all the factors combined, the thing flaps up and down like an airplane wing and just breaks apart, destroys itself.
As I understand it, almost from the very beginning, people noticed that there might be some problems with the bridge, that it was doing a little bit of kind of swaying in the wind, not what it ultimately ended up doing. But when did people start to think, uh-oh, we've got a problem?
Yeah, I mean, the bridge opened on July 1st, 1940. And July is, you know, it's not the windiest month of the year. But within a few days, people did notice that it moved up and down. And at some point, someone started using the phrase Galloping Gertie to describe it. And in the Seattle Times, anyway, it didn't appear until after the bridge collapsed. But it was well known by summer of 1940 that this bridge moved up and down. And there's one commenter in the paper who said that, you know, that you pay 50 cents for the toll to drive across. The up and down ride is free.
So did the engineers know they had a problem? Did they do anything to try to fix it?
Yeah, they brought in a professor from the University of Washington named Bert Farquharson. But he was doing work in September of 1940 to figure out what they could do to retrofit the bridge to make the span where the vehicles traveled across act less like an airplane wing, to take the wind coming at it laterally from side to side and help it move around it, not take it and lift it up and down as if it were an airplane wing.
And how far did they get? They had a concept. Why didn't they actually solve the problem?
Oh, well, they by early of November 1940, they had tested in a wind tunnel a retrofit to put these sort of deflectors, I guess I would call them, on the sides of the bridge. And they were ready to begin that work probably the weekend after it collapsed, if it hadn't collapsed. And that's why the engineer, Farquharson, he was on site that morning observing the bridge to see what was going on because he was getting ready to do work on it.
I wonder if you can take us back to the moment where the bridge collapsed.
Yeah.
What happened?
1940 is such a heady time, right? Because at the same day this bridge opened up in July, the Lake Washington Floating Bridge opened up, you know, the first one, the one that eventually sank itself, but that's a whole other story. McChord Air Force Base had also just opened then. You know, the Depression was ending. World War II had started in Europe. We were about to enter World War II. So this is a big, it's heady time. It's a lot of public investment in infrastructure. So by the time November rolls around, the bridge has had problems, right? The Lake Washington Floating Bridge is doing fine. Everyone's excited. You know, the McChord Air Force Base is busy. Tacoma is, you know, is a going concern. The winds are blowing. They think that maybe a few days before November 7th, the date the bridge actually collapsed, that a late night windstorm did some damage that maybe wasn't detected in advance. And so when the wind starts blowing in the morning of November 7th, like around 7:30 or so, it starts to buck more than it has before, and people notice a difference. So by about 10:30, traffic has been shut down. One of the last cars to get across the bridge is driven by a guy who works for the News Tribune. He's an editor. He's on his way to his cabin or something. The bridge is bucking so hard, he has to abandon his car and get out. And that's that car. I think it's like a 36 Plymouth or something. It's parked sort of sideways on the bridge deck. He forgets his poor dog, a Cocker Spaniel mix named Tubby. Tubby is cowering down behind the back seat, and Tubby is the actual only casualty of the bridge collapse because he's unable to get Tubby out of the car. He escapes. This UW engineer, Farquharson, is there. And you can see that in the film, the lampposts are going back and forth, probably like at a 60-degree angle from side to side. And then the whole thing is just, it's like a ribbon being just flapped, like someone's like cracking a bullwhip the way it's moving and moving. And then obviously it's concrete and metal. There's only so much that can take. And so by about 11:02, you start to see the first piece of concrete fall off. And by 11:09, the whole thing is collapsed into the Puget Sound below. So it's about a 7-minute process from start of the destruction to the thing just sitting there and blowing in the wind with the cables flapping back and forth.
When new technologies like this fail, people feel different things about it, sad, you know, about the sort of failure of forward progress. What was the mood in 1940 when this thing collapses?
Oh, well, right away the governor is there, and I think it's Governor Martin. He's saying, we're going to replace this right away. We're going to replace this right away. But of course, it's almost wartime, and it wasn't that simple. So it took 10 years to get a new one built. But I mean, my favorite part about this is that, you know, prior to the bridge being completed, there was a couple of ferries that ran between Point Defiance and Gig Harbor. One was the Vashon, one was the Scansonia. And so within a day or two of the bridge collapsing, the Vashon and the Scansonia were back at work hauling passengers back and forth. They're sort of the tried and true method of transportation around Puget Sound going back, you know, millennia, if you think of the natives, was by boat. And so, yeah, the bridge collapses, get the ferries running again, and that's what they did. And the Scansonia is that's that ferry boat that's in Lake Union you can rent for parties and stuff. It sort of came to the rescue when the Narrows Bridge collapsed 75 years ago.
Ultimately, what's the takeaway that's taught in classes today about this bridge, and what's the lesson basically for civil engineers that they're never going to repeat?
Something about having that visual makes people want to be, I guess, reassured that we did learn something from it. The fact there were engineers on site who were getting ready to do work on it and who had been studying it for several months let it become this case study that has informed bridge design going forward. I mean, any bridge designed in the U.S. after this, you can bet they took aerodynamic factors into account that they hadn't before.
Take it one step further. What's the takeaway?
When infrastructure works, we don't even think about it. We take it for granted. I mean, whether you turn on the tap and, you know, pure water comes out that you can drink without boiling or purifying. I love public infrastructure. My dad was an engineer. I love this notion of civilization progressing by the quality and the integrity of the things that we build and how long they last into further generations. I mean, we drive across the Aurora Bridge every day. That was built in 1932. But the investment, whatever that cost, that bridge, it's paid for itself so many times. And it might have been arguments about what it cost back then. But boy, if you think about the long-term benefit of really good, solid public infrastructure, it's amazing what you get for your investment.
Felix Spinell, freelance journalist, former deputy director at MOHI, Seattle's Museum of History and Industry, speaking to KUOW's David Hyde. It was 75 years ago tomorrow the Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapsed into Puget Sound.